From APM in New York, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. 36,000 Verizon workers went on strike this week. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's the largest strike in America since workers from the same company went on strike in 2011. A group of workers were protesting outside of a Verizon building here in New York.
What do we want?
Contract.
When do we want it?
Now.
One of those workers from the Communications Workers of America Union was Robert Blakes, 54, been with the company 18 years. His beef?
We're trying to keep the benefits that we have. They're trying to take the benefits from us. And so, you know, the commercials say that they're number one, but they don't treat their employees as number one. If it's a company that's making billions of dollars, doesn't want to share the wealth.
Verizon, you may guess, has a different view of this dispute. Here's Ray McConville, spokesperson for the telecom giant.
When you take the value of the salary and the benefits, it's worth about $130,000 a year for the average technician. I think these are great upper-middle-class jobs, and they will continue to be that way going forward, and they deserve that.
Translation, Verizon's technicians are doing just fine, according to Verizon, but this is about something else, too. Its biggest moneymaker right now is rooted in the mobile world, and a lot of the workers going on strike are the kind that lay and maintain cables that stretch Verizon's network into homes. Those phone lines, cable lines, and broadband internet lines not pulling in as much cash as they used to. Susan Crawford is co-director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society. We caught her, yep, on one of those old-fashioned telephone lines. Susan, thanks for picking up.
Hey, Ben, thanks for calling.
So how are telecom jobs changing right now?
What's going on here is that Verizon's trying to get away from unionized employees. It isn't so much about the jobs they do, because 95% of a wireless connection is a wire, but more that Verizon sees its profits coming in on the wireless side and wants to get away from having to deal with a union on the wireline side.
Is this also about the possibility that telecoms like Verizon are in a wait-and-see moment when it comes to providing gigabit internet in new communities, new markets?
It's fair to say that Verizon has been ambivalent about its fiber products across the country. It has sold off its Fios lines in California and Texas and Florida, and it's really heading towards being almost entirely a wireless company where it sees all of its revenue coming.
What do you see as the telecom repair job of the future being?
Well, it remains the same, maybe less customer service, but in order to make wireless networks work, Verizon's going to have a lot of fiber in the ground going to towers, and it's going to have to make sure that those connections are powerful. What they get by exiting the wireline world is not so much customer service, not actually running lines directly into people's houses. And they get non-union employees, and that's what they're looking for.
Susan Crawford, she's professor of law at Harvard Law School, also co-director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Susan, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks so much, Ben.
By the way, we asked Verizon if they were planning to end their relationships with unions. They said effectively, no. Today in Las Vegas, CinemaCon is wrapping up. The annual conference is focused on the movie theater business and how to keep it going. Some global estimates for 2015 suggest theater attendance neared a two-decade low. So theater owners are trying to fix that with new gadgetry. Marketplace Entertainment correspondent Adrian Hill is at CinemaCon. Adrian, what can we expect to see in theaters of the near future?
Well, I'm seeing lots of new tech. I'm not sure how much will come to the movie theaters, but there's all kinds. At the high end, there are companies here like Dolby trying to sell theaters on installing elaborate sound in theater systems. And then one of the bigger pushes we're seeing is 4D theaters.
All right, 4D, the fourth dimension. I don't know. What is that?
These are chairs that will shake and rattle and rumble you right along with the car in the movie. They will spray mist in your face. They will blow wind in your hair. The idea is basically to bring people into the movie, to give them a more immersive experience and to get them to spend a lot more money on their tickets.
This is something we've seen before, though, right? I mean, we've seen in the past a little bit.
Oh, yeah, way back in the 1950s. There's this movie called called The Tingler, which was directed by a man named William Castle. And I actually got to see this a few years ago in a theater in L.A.
And remember this, a scream at the right time may save your life.
William Castle put a buzzer under people's seats, and there's a moment in the movie when the tingler escapes into the theater. The projectionist hit a button and it buzzed people's seats, and it was, I guess, very exciting.
The industry has to be thinking about or worrying about people staying home as the tech we have in our living rooms gets better and better, right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, so much of the focus here this week has been on the experience of going to the movies. How do we make that its own really special experience that we can't replicate at home? And there's been a lot of chatter about a plan known as the Screening Room, which comes from entrepreneur Sean Parker, the guy behind Napster.
Oh, yes.
Which, if it launches, big disruptor. It's a big if it launches, would allow people to pay $50 to watch the new blockbuster in their living room the same time it comes out in theaters. You can guess theater owners do not like this idea. The studios, I think, have shown a little bit more interest. Some directors have definitely publicly come out in favor of it, but it would completely disrupt the movie theater industry.
Marketplace Entertainment correspondent Adrian Hill. Adrian, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks, Ben.
And before we go, an update on Matthew Keyes, a former social media editor who was accused of giving hacker group Anonymous access to the website of the LA Times back in 2010. Hackers then made a change to a headline on a news story that was changed back soon afterwards. Keyes was convicted in October. He has now been sentenced to 2 years in prison. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.